VentureCast.
How come I've never seen you at the opera?
Okay, I can start.
It's theater.
I'm ready.
Why is it theater? Why isn't it theatry?
Because theatry. I'm not a fucking dumbass.
Well, yeah, but like it's spelled T-R-E, isn't it?
Because the E at the end of a word augments the vowel in the middle of the word, Bob. Come on, man.
All right. I don't know if you can tell by my typing, but I'm not great at grammar.
I mean, I have an English degree, so if you have any other questions, concerns.
I have a talking degree. I just talked for my degree.
What's your degree in?
Broadcast journalism.
You graduated from Suffolk, so they don't offer a broadcast journalism degree.
Is that true?
Yep. I was like, where was I going? Hollywood Upstairs Medical School.
I'm pretty sure that's what I tell everyone. Maybe it was just communications. Fuck.
Yeah.
In my head, in my fucking head, it was broadcast journalism. You better believe it.
Oh, you didn't.
Nope.
You sure didn't.
You couldn't just give me that, Mike?
Bobby's like one of those people that has a medical school degree, but it's from a school in the Caribbean. Welcome into Missing the Point. Oh my gosh, I'm your host, DK Sizzle. Oh my gosh, I'm here with two motherfuckers. One motherfucker, real BK Bob Kelly. Other motherfucker, real Mike Marcangelo. Unlike what we just discovered pre-show, Bobby's bachelor's degree. little inside joke. Really applies to the listeners. It was a wild, wild card weekend. It was a wonderful wild card weekend. It was a wounding wild card weekend. If you're
just going in on that alliteration, huh?
If you're really? Yeah, alliteration. See, maybe you did get a bachelor's
See,
degree.
That's what I'm talking about, bro.
Or you read the first part of the dictionary at least. You never went to the, got to the B's.
I gotta got get to past. The, yeah, I was thinking K, but
well, here we are, gentlemen. We're talking about what I would consider a pretty fun weekend of wild card football. Bob, I know you were probably stressed about your Dallas Cowboys. Mike, I'm sure you were just enjoying it from the neutral perspective like myself. But I thought what we'd do today is we'd do a little review of what happened on wild card weekend and then a little projection of what those winning teams are going to be doing in this coming weekend, if that's okay with you guys. This is essentially the power ranking show for the postseason. And it's difficult to rank them like 1 to 10 or whatever. That's just dumb, I think, or 1 to 8. I think that what we really should be doing is just talking about it game by game and just going like, this team sucks. There's no way that they're going to win when we're talking about the Cowboys. And then we should be like, this team's good. They're going to, anyway, I'm sorry. It's mean. It's because they started losing me money towards the end of the regular season. But I think we're just going to take it game by game. And the first one I would love to just get out of the way is Ravens-Bengals. So we talked about how, you know, the word turgid has come up a few times over the course of the year by me. I've used it quite a lot when it comes to these offenses. But the Ravens looked better than I thought they were going to look. Or did the Bengals look worse than we thought they were going to look? Which one was it, Bob?
I think the Ravens looked better. I mean, you know, except for the fact that they decided not to give J.K. Dobbins the ball and try and let Tyler Huntley, you know, pop it through the goal line from 3 yards out. I thought they looked good, man. Huntley was, you know, definitely delivering his throws. And Dobbins was going in that first half. Honestly, I think the Ravens had a shot to win that game, like outright.
They were in the conversation until that right. goal stand. Essentially.
They would have gone ahead, and it would have been, you know, it would have been tough for the psyche of the Bengals, I think, for them to come right back down the field after how much they've been dominating them to be down 7 all of a sudden. I don't know if they would have came back like that, but yeah, man, it was a great game. I just think the biggest takeaway from this one is that Sam Hubbard 98-yard dash, man, that was unbelievable.
Awesome,
unbelievable.
Mike, was this a divisional game happening in the wild card round, so it looked closer than the talent of the teams may have sort of delineated? Or was this just a game where the Ravens played a little bit above themselves, the Bengals didn't have their best game? What was going on here? Is this because these teams know each other so well?
I think it's a combination of the teams knowing each other so well, and also, just to dig up one of my old takes, Lamar Jackson doesn't mean that much to the Ravens. And I say that because Tyler Huntley was better in this game than Lamar Jackson has been in every single playoff game he's played.
Okay.
All of them.
All right.
His average. I'm just telling you, I know stats, but In terms of quarter, like being a quarterback, yeah, I think he lost a little bit of that that second dimension, but he still only still ran for like 50 yards. I think the fact that the Ravens were in this until that 90-yard touchdown, I think maybe the Bengals were playing down to them a little bit.
Mm.
But I think if it was any other team, right? Like I have a real soft spot in my heart for Joe Burrow. I don't think that there's any lead or any deficit that he can't overcome. So yeah, the teams know each other, but I think in all actuality, the fact that you had a backup quarterback who was, by the way, like this close to making the Pro Bowl this year in Tyler Huntley, and that offense didn't really seem to miss a beat. And if you look at some of the passes that he made into tight windows in the playoffs, that's been one of my peak criticisms of Lamar. So I thought it was a really good showing, but they're just not the Ravens that we used to know. Their defense just sucks. It's so bad, so soft.
And it just feels like they, as a team, are soft at this point. You know, I just think, look, you did keep going back to it. It really was the play of the game, too. But that from the 2-yard line, for that to be the outcome, right? To me, that just shouts, this is one of the softest teams in the league. I mean, they outgained the Bengals by over 130 yards in this game. It was 364 to 234, right? You got to win that game. And that play right there, I think, just kind of encapsulates what the Ravens season has been. You know what I mean? Like we've hit on this so many times this year, where it's a team that, you know, it is good for three quarters or great for three quarters, and then just has so many backbreaking plays that happen in so many different games, to the point where it's like they seem like they have losing in their DNA at this point rather than winning. That's how
we're talking about DNA again. Fucking mitochondria, fucking Bobby over there. He's a scientist, okay? He got his fucking bachelor's from Suffolk in science.
In science.
in DNA science. I mean, I guess when you're just looking at it, like you're looking at it in the cold light of day and you're looking at the Ravens coming into this game, you kind of knew exactly what was going to happen one way or the other. Like, yeah, it might have been a little closer, but like for me at least, I'm watching the game and I'm like, they're still not going to win. Like whatever happens, right. Okay, they're down 7, like they're not going to win. Like the Bengals are going to find a way to win this and the Ravens aren't. Like, to your point, Bobby, like if you didn't know the backstory of these two teams and like what they both bring to the table in crunch time situations, you'd be like, oh, they're only down 7, like they've got a chance. Mm-hmm. But really, like nobody, yeah. Like we have a group chat. Nobody was going like, oh shit, like fucking eye emoji. Everybody was like, yeah, well, we know how this is ending. Like Joe Burrow's coming out of this with a win. I think to your point, Mike, if Lamar Jackson's in there, I don't know if we're thinking that. Like, I feel like he's in there to make like dynamic plays. Like, are you, if you're the GM of the Baltimore Ravens right now, are you like, don't worry about it. Let him walk. Who cares? Who gives a shit?
Let him walk. Like, let him walk.
Well,
the players were singing a different tune, though. I mean, J.K. Dobbins almost immediately after the game said that if Lamar was here, we win that game. And it was almost immediate. And
I think they have a better shot. I mean
if so Lamar was there,
think of it this way. The two biggest reasons, I think, in my opinion, why they lost this game is the third down conversion rate and that play on the two. And where is Lamar Jackson the most dangerous? Third down and inside the 5-yard line.
Well, I think any elite quarterback, like any quarterback that you can deem in the top 10 of the NFL or make an argument for, which this gentleman is not, is going to make plays on third down. That's what's going to happen, right? Like that's what the money's for. You know, like that's what the money's for. That's what the bag he was supposed to get was for that he's not going to get. So I just think, yeah, like you said, it's like one team had Joe Burrow and one team didn't. And I think if it was more of a head-to-head, like I'm not saying Lamar, like if I had to pick, obviously I'm picking Joe Burrow. Like I'm having Joe Burrow over Lamar Jackson every day of the week and twice on Sunday. Like I'm not saying that. What I am saying, though, is we'll entertain the thought that the Ravens could find a way to win that game based on the context that the game was in if Lamar Jackson strides out onto the field and looks like Lamar Jackson for the whole day. You know, it's like, yeah, sure. There was some ground yardage in that system. There was There was some plays here and there, and I even will always accept the criticism of Lamar's deep ball and how he's been in the playoffs, Mike. You're not wrong about that. This year looked different, though. Like, I just feel like this year looked like Lamar dragging this fucking team across the finish line over and over and over again, or their defense fucking it up for what he did for 3.5 quarters. You know, like, that's how it looked to me. Like, yeah. But this time last year, I was agreeing with you. I was like, yeah, I don't know, man. Like, in crunch time and this situation and that situation, he had a career year this year. You know, he looked like the dude. And maybe it's because he was like trying to get his bag or whatever, but like, I don't know. I just, it's tough for me to put a hypothetical on a guy that didn't play. It's not fair.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I would just, like, my whole point, and I'm just going by like the stats and based on what we've seen historically, but I mean, Lamar's played, I think it's like 4 playoff games. He's had 3 touchdowns, 5 picks, and he averages 6 sacks for a loss of 38 yards per game.
I have a more meta theory about scrambling quarterbacks and their sack rates. Like, it's, I'm not saying it's like designed, but like, if you're protecting a quarterback who you know is mobile, right, and you buy him 4 seconds in the pocket, you're probably going to be like, whatever, he's just going to roll out this way. Like, let me just get in this other guy's way. You know, like, it's,
yeah,
you're almost more sackable if you're not a pocket QB, because your guys have different assignments. You know, like, they might need to get out ahead of you and start blocking. Like, I just notice it a little bit more with mobile guys. And
I was going to say, but in this game, like, Huntley rushes 9 times for 55 yards. Like, that's a little bit of
lack of game tape thing too, right? Like, it's like, we don't care what Huntley does. Like, if we're gonna make, if you like, if the Bengals are going like, yeah, let's let Huntley fucking beat us, like, he's not gonna, right? That's just like a good plan as far as I'm concerned. If you do that to Lamar Jackson, if you go, let's let Lamar Jackson beat us, he fucking will.
So specifically, the thing that pops out in my head when you say that is, you guys definitely remember this, there's 2 specific plays where they rolled Huntley out on bootlegs where he had a full head of steam coming up to the line of scrimmage. Like, he was moving, right? He gets like 8 or 9 because he doesn't make those 2 Lamar moves and take it 70 yards to the house. If Lamar's in there, I just think those plays are so much different. When Lamar gets on the edge, man, it's a whole different
point, like, I think they're spying Lamar. I think that their game plan for his movement,
everything.
Huntley ran for those yards because they're like, sure, like, let him run. Like, he'll get 8 or 9 here and there, but he's not going to like fucking Lamar Jackson us. So let's just make sure he can't make big throwing plays or like kill us here, kill us there. It was like a little bit of a bend, don't break. Like, I think switch, like, you're not going to play Lamar the same way. You're just not going to play him the same way. You're not going to give him that much freedom to run is my point. Otherwise, you're asking for a bullet.
But do you think that if the Bengals or if the Ravens played anyone else in this first round, so they played the Bills, they played, I guess, not the Jags or the Chargers, but so if they played the Bills, the Ravens don't keep up with them like this, do they?
No, I don't think so. That's what I asked Mike in the first place. Like, is this, these two teams knowing each other, this being like a divisional game? Like, it had kind of a weird smell to it the whole time anyway for that reason, I think. It just had like a little bit of a weird vibe to it, but it was like a movie, an exciting movie that you knew the ending of already, though. You know, it's like you knew how it was going to play out. I think if they're playing the Bills, I mean, again, the Bills looked, we'll move on to this, but they looked a little vulnerable defensively, too. I'd like to think that it was the weird kind of juju of the fucking wild card round that like factored into the Bills and how they looked. But they also had a lackluster offensive day, and they scored 34 points. So, like, you know, it's weird. It's weird to sort of do hypotheticals on that.
I think
the best case scenario for the Ravens this Saturday was to play a team that they played twice this year. That's what I think.
100% agreed. Yeah. And one last thing that we've driven into the ground a couple times this year. John Harbaugh, to me, is no longer a good football coach. I'm sorry. But
he looked under pressure. I feel like we might not see him coach the Ravens next year. That's the vibe that I'm getting. It, like, just, he yelled at the sideline reporter, or like,
was
he was
so
like
funny,
like through gritted teeth, being like, why don't you see how the freaking game plays out? And I'm like, okay, Harbaugh, Jesus. Did somebody fuck up the hedges at your mansion? Like, calm down, dude.
It's just
it's fine.
It's, it's inexcusable that J.K. Dobbins is having the game that he's having. He already literally punched one in.
We talked about the 2 yard line. We talked about this like week three.
It's just inexcusable, man. You can't call a QB sneak and advise. I don't know maybe he didn't advise him. I don't know. But and have your quarterback not have the wherewithal to just power through that line and try and go up over like that. It's like sliding in the first base in baseball, bro. It's like, what are you doing? You're literally 6 feet away. Your arm span is not six goddamn feet.
Mm-hmm.
It was just
Mike. Do you think that to end on this Ravens Bengals conversation? Do you think that question one and then question one B, Harbaugh coaching the Ravens again next year with Lamar walking, definitely walking, and question one B, has the NFL, has the modern football game passed the Harbaugh era? Are we past that now? I want to know.
All right. So yes, Harbaugh will be the coach with Lamar walking. And I don't know that it's passed. I don't know that it's passing by, because can you think of another head coach where, you know, he centered their entire offensive scheme around Lamar, rightfully so. The last 2 to 3 years, Lamar has not been healthy for the playoffs or for big stretches of the season, and they still find themselves there.
Mm.
So I think that is a testament to him and the players on the team. Like I don't know. I think that this Ravens team is in a weird spot, right? Because when they've been bad offensively under him, they've had a really great defense. Now they're meh offensively and they're piss poor defensively.
I agree with you, and I think you could look at it one of two ways. Like you could look at it like the roster is getting elevated by him, or you could look at it as he's made a lot of fucking bad game time decisions, like game management decisions this year, like
and
fourth down
year.
Decisions, special teams decisions, like stuff where you're like, what are you doing, Harbaugh? Like, you're supposed to be one of the guys. Like, if you're doing a head coach fantasy draft, right, and everybody's redrafting, Harbaugh's going in the top five. But, like, are we sure? Are we sure that that's still the case? Like, is his reputation preceding him a little bit, I wonder? Because we've been calling out dumb mistakes that he's been making since week three. So, I mean, look.
Well, just to turn it back on UGK, could you confidently pick four head coaches ahead of him right now?
I mean, first of all, in saying he's top five doesn't necessarily mean he's fifth. But look,
let's just pretend that he is.
But for the very Mike Marcangelo reframing of the question, I will do my best to answer it. I'm taking Tomlin above him still. I'm taking Belichick above him still. I'm taking Dable above him. I'm probably taking Dable one overall, to be honest.
I'm taking Dable over every. I'm taking Dable
stop,
over.
Stop. The stop. President. Stop. No, you don't mean that.
I'm taking Shanahan over him for sure. So yeah, yes. I just named four. So yeah, I would take those four guys ahead of him. I'd probably take Mike McDaniel before him, just for the fun. Just for the fun.
Really?
For the vaping on the sidelines?
Yeah, he's like a bro. He seems like he'd be one of my buddies. If like John Harbaugh seems like your dad, if Mike McDaniel's your bro, John Harbaugh's your dad.
That was confirmed, by the way. We can use this as the transition, but that was confirmed that he is a bro, and we would chill with him. The fact that he is in an NFC or AFC wild card game. With like 4 minutes left, and he's just sitting on the sideline, ripping his vape, calling him.
I mean, wouldn't you?
Like,
I'd
come
be
on,
fucking stressed.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing, man. Yeah.
What about the kids at home? What kind of example are you setting? On that note, let's move on to the Bills and the Dolphins. I think that the Dolphins, to me, I mean, it's sort of the same question, right? Like, did the Bills underperform or did the Dolphins overperform? I know the Bills obviously still came away with the dub, but the Dolphins pushed them. This was a better example, I think, than the Ravens-Bengals. Correct me if I'm wrong, gents. This was a better example of the worst team pushing the better team the whole way, giving them a game, staying in their faces, starting off pot, getting them worried, doing all the things that an underdog in that exact situation is supposed to do, to be honest. And that, to me, is down to the coaching. On top of that, the Dolphins are in a position where when they were good, like me and Bobby talked about this last week, he basically had the same record as Flores, right? Except in reverse, right? So that's damning. however, they lost their starting QB. I know it's Tua, right? And he's not, whatever. Say what you will about him, but he was having a fucking great year, when all the concussions yep.
he was having a great year. He was top three MVP at one 100%.
And like I if you were to push me on it, I would say they were probably still going to get figured out. But I do think that that coach got more wins out of them than maybe they deserve. I think Flores did too. I think both things are true. It's just a matter of like which order it went in. I think that team has a lot of flaws. McDaniel has a better version of that team, obviously, with Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle and all that stuff. But your starting QB goes down. I mean, like, how come he's not getting the same sympathy and then praise to push the Buffalo Bills, who are Super Bowl favorites at this point, the praise to put to take a third string quarterback, the equivalent of a third string quarterback, and push them the whole way? I mean, where's the love for Mikey? You share a name.
Okay. So why doesn't he get the same praise or sympathy or whatever you want to call it? Probably because he went 1-5 in his last six without a starter. Like, I don't
without his starter.
Can. Yeah, but there was, yeah, it was one, a putrid. It was a puke worthy 1-5.
It was bad. Like, so,
but then the Bills game gets in the playoffs. That's the remit. That's his remit. That's his job. Make the playoffs. Made the playoffs. Simple as that. Pushed the best team, one of the best two teams in the AFC the whole way. Pushed them the whole way. Made a hell of a game out of it. To me, I was just watching it going like, I love this guy. Like, you know, they didn't win, but I love this guy for doing this. Like, they didn't go. They didn't. They went down swinging. And I think that that's an identity.
Sure. Yeah, I'm with you there because I think it takes balls to have Teddy Bridgewater on your staff and just say, you know what, we're just going to roll with Skyler. We'll just see what happens. And because if they win that game, that's an organizational change in game, because he is just telling you, we're just going to rally around the next guy up. We're not going to go easy with what most people think with Teddy Bridgewater. I thought that, yeah, they played better than they have in the last 6 weeks, and the Bills played worse than they have in the last 6 weeks. But I can honestly say, and I think you would all agree, never in that game did I think that the Bills were going to lose. Ever.
No, I don't know, man. Not as much, not quite as much as the Bengals game, though. Like, I thought that there was a little bit of, like, a few moments in there where I was like, ooh, the Bills are looking like that version of themselves that might potentially banana skin on this, you know?
So two things. With the McDaniel part, I love Mike McDaniels, right? We raved about him all year. The last 6 weeks, and including this game, man, I don't know what the fuck he was doing, where the fuck his head was, because for you to have such an important pivotal drive like the Dolphins did at the end of that game, and for you to get two delay of game calls on that drive is absolutely inexcusable. You cannot do that. You know, and it wasn't even like an audible where, you know, they needed to change plays and they didn't do it fast enough. It was an actual, like, walking up to the line, not having the play called, everyone being disorganized and running out of time. It was absolutely brutal. The second thing is, in my opinion, I don't know about you guys, the Bills were the only reason the Dolphins were actually in this game. I'll be more specific, actually. Josh Allen specifically was the only reason the Dolphins were in this game at any point. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I mean, it felt like he was trying to give it to them only to tell you, like, no matter how many opportunities I'm giving you, I can still win this with just one flick of the wrist.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it felt like.
Because, like, bro, it was unbelievable to the point where, like, Romo, right? I don't know if you remember this point, but Romo was talking about how much the Bills were about to take off. And he's like, here comes Josh Allen. Here he comes. Fumble. Touchdown. And it was just like, bro, this version of Josh Allen is everything that everyone was talking shit about with Dak Prescott, right? It is like too many turnovers. You know, takes to no. It's the same route. So I just don't understand why no one's really pointing in on this, because to me, I think that this is going to be the absolute backbreaker for the Buffalo Bills this year. And I don't think there's any doubt in my mind of that, man. It's like, if if the Bills don't win the Super Bowl, it's because Josh Allen turned the ball over. And that is almost a guarantee at this point. You know what I mean?
But that's
the only
do you
reason.
Think, but do you think Listen, he's turning the ball over? Do you think he's turning the ball over because of Josh Allen, that guyism? Or is he turning the ball over because they're pulling up some weird schemes in the red zone, man? You know, like they're overthinking it a little bit.
I mean, bro, for this game to be this close and Skylar Thompson to be 18 of 45 for 231 yards, and for Jeff Wilson, their leading rusher, to have 10 rushes for 23 yards is fucking inexcusable. I'm sorry. And the only reason the Dolphins didn't win is because the coach couldn't get organized and get the goddamn play in. So it's like, I like the Bills. They were my favorite, you know, all year. They were like one. They were number one in the power rankings for like the first 6-7 weeks. The way this Bills team is playing scares me. It really does, man, because I just see it coming.
Two things. Fair to say that they were playing down, right? Because they thought that they didn't have to do anything crazy to beat a third string rookie quarterback.
Yeah, that's risky though, Mike. Thompson. That's risky.
Yeah, no, but you can kind of take that risk when you have Josh Allen throwing to, you know, Steph Diggs and Gabe Davis.
For sure.
Now it almost backfired, but again, I was pretty confident that it wasn't going to. But
less confident though than the Bengals Ravens, right? Like less confident.
No. I don't know who Skylar Thompson is, so I never had confidence that he was going to keep them in the game. But this is why, DK, just to bring it all back to your original question, is why does McDaniels not get the credit? The last four wins of the Dolphins regular season were the Bears, the Browns without Deshaun, the Texans, and the Jets 11-6.
And that Jets win was the ugliest goddamn football game I've ever seen in my life. That was a horrible football game.
11-6.
Yeah, all right, fine. That's fair. I think that is sort of fair. I was just a little pumped for the Dolphins because we were like kind of high on them for the first part of the season.
We were just pumped to have a bro. You know what I mean? We were like, oh,
I like McDaniel. Like Bobby was handing him his fucking walking papers last week. He was like, if he had lost that last fucking game, not made the playoffs, they were going to fire him. I heard it from a guy I knew when I went to Suffolk. And it was this like whole thing. So I was a little bit like, oh shit, some shit might be able to go down here. I also think like we, you know, as much as everything happened with Damar Hamlin and all that stuff that happened to the Bills, and like we kind of didn't really know what Bills we were going to see going to the Pats game and coming into this game. And I do think that that stuff's probably having an impact, whether it be positive or negative. Like it's going to be in their heads. Other than that, if you put that to the side, they are weirdly flawed as a football team, the Bills. Like they just, they do have these weird flaws, like the I can't quite put my finger on why they're fucking this up right now kind of flaws. And like you can hear it in the commentary, like you were saying, Bobby, like, you can sort of hear like, all right, here we go. Finally, Josh Allen's going to do all this Josh Allen shit. Nope. And then it's like fumble, like strip sack, like interception in the red zone. And it's like, he's actually honestly, this isn't me being denigrating him, because he's honestly so good that he can make mistakes and still win you a football game based 100%. On what he's doing, based on what he's doing. You know, like he's fucking up, but he's also winning you the game at the same time because he's so fucking good. So I think there's some weirdness in how they scheme certain things. I'm still really of the belief that Josh Allen has the sort of elite mental strength that is required by a champion, and we will see him win a Super Bowl. I just think that team has just one or two too many flaws to get past the 49ers, you know, in a Super Bowl game, to get past the Chiefs in an AFC Championship game, to get past the Bengals in an AFC Championship game. Like, there's too many teams that I would favor going in at this point, because the Bills have that flawed sort of chemistry about them. So we'll see. I mean, I could be proven wrong. I very easily could be proven wrong, because the Bills are, like we've been saying all year, they're a fucking wagon. But there's just something not quite right. There's something not quite right about how
there's
that team
a, there's
is
a,
right.
They're a wagon, but there's a little hole in the bottom of that wagon. And every once in a while,
they're on the Oregon Trail, and two of them have died of dysentery.
Right. and they're just handing things out underneath the wagon to you know,
right, right. No, I hear you. I'm with you. All right. Well, let's round out the AFC with the probably was the best game of the weekend. Honestly, I feel free to argue with me on it, but the Chargers Jags game. I think I turned it off when the Chargers were how much were they up? Like 21?
It was 27-7.
27-7, right? So I was like, okay, this is over. And
it was 27-0 before the start. They scored to end the half. So it was 27-0 before the
right.
Start.
Yeah. I think I didn't revisit it at halftime. That's what I did. I went to the furniture store to get a bed. And then I started getting Discord messages. I was like, fucking wild card weekend. I was like all mad. It was raining out here in LA, which never happens. And I was all mad that the game sucked. And I was like, fucking wild card weekend. Like, it's always like really good teams playing really shitty teams. And I was like all pissy getting in my car to go to the furniture store. And then I'm standing in the furniture store being like, yeah, we'll get this bed. And I looked down on my phone and it's like Discord, 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 Discord. And I'm like, wait. And I look and it's all you guys being like, oh, shit. Oh, shit. And I'm like, we have to go home. We have to go home right now. By the bed. We have to go home right now. Something's happening. And it was an inspired comeback. It was Trevor Lawrence proving that he had that thing we were talking about him maybe having last week or a few weeks ago. You guys, it was you I was talking to you about this.
Yeah.
But what it proved to me is it's so rare to be a quarterback, especially in your second year, notwithstanding, to be a quarterback in Jacksonville, to have spent your first year under Urban Meyer, all that notwithstanding. Just being a young QB getting your ass kicked that bad. Just being a young QB getting your ass kicked that bad. And it's you. You're throwing fucking picks. You're making the Chargers defense look like
they're so bad in that first quarter.
He was making the Chargers defense look like they were the 0-1 Ravens. Like they were absolutely everywhere because his eyes apparently were just giving it all away. And they were picking him off. They were fucking him up. And to come back, it's not as if his running back fumbled and that's why there was a scoop and score or like whatever. He was throwing picks. Like he was playing bad.
He and threw to come three back picks from that, to Asante Samuel Jr. In a row.
Like, I mean,
it was fucking wild.
I love that. Did you see the Al Michaels like 17 years apart calling a picks for an Asante Samuel? I thought that was pretty sick.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah. I mean, Al Michaels, what an institution. But I think I saw something in Trevor Lawrence that will never have my mind changed. And what I think I decided this weekend, and this is such a fucking like kid on a podcast hot take, but if Joe Burrow is who we thought we were getting when we got fucking why can't I remember his name? I can't believe I'm blanking on this fucking kid's name. The dude that just won a game for the LA Rams, the quarterback.
Baker Mayfield.
Oh my God. It's like I blocked it out. So if Joe Burrow is who we thought we were getting when we got Baker Mayfield, right? I think that Trevor Lawrence might be who we thought we were getting when we got Justin Herbert. I think it might be the case. Like, honestly, I mean, that contrast on the day. Now, I'm not saying in any way that was Justin Herbert's fault, by the way, because I actually think if you look at his numbers and you look what he went out there and did, I don't think that was necessarily his fault. But it's just as true as Trevor Lawrence coming back. I also don't think Trevor Lawrence lets that happen to his team in the reverse. You know, I just don't think he does. I think he's got that thing. I'm not saying Herbert doesn't, but he's got that thing, yeah. Trevor Lawrence. Don't you think?
Yeah, I think we were talking about this last time I was on, and we were saying, like, who do you trust to fuck up the game more? And, you had said Lawrence, and we had said Herbert, but the picture you painted was, Herbert didn't do anything to lose that game, but he also did nothing to win it. And Trevor Lawrence did everything he possibly could in that first quarter to fucking lose that game, and then did the exact opposite in the second half to win. And I think for all the commentary about maybe his pedigree and his headspace, and he's never lost that much, to have thrown four interceptions in essentially 16 minutes of football, and to still say, you know what, like I can still win this game. That's a gut check, and he did it. And I think we're witnessing something here that's telling us that he's going to be a mainstay in the top 10 quarterback for like the next, let's just call it 10 to 15 years.
That's
and
what
he
I
might
mean.
Not have, he might not
that's
have all
I
the stats that Herbert will, but he'll win games.
But that's what I mean when I say what we thought we were getting with Justin Herbert. I think it's like, I thought Justin Herbert just needed to have a game like that to prove that he was what we thought he was, you know?
Yeah.
But unfortunately, he was on the wrong end of it. And I really thought, you know how high I was on him coming into this year? I really thought that's what we were going to see this year. I thought we were going to see that year out of Justin Herbert. Him dragging his team out from bad coaching decisions. Him dragging his team out from injuries. Him making these plays. But he wasn't quite there. When he was at his best was when everybody was healthy, when they were playing the right teams, when they were making the right calls. When he was in that vacuum, in that biodome, he was at his best. And it's weird to switch this hard. But man, I lost a lot of faith in Herbert. Am I overreacting, Bob? Is one game to one off? I mean, that's a big game, though.
So, yes and no. Okay, because
Bob's like, you might be overreacting, then you might be overreacting.
But like, listen, Trevor Lawrence is absolutely a dog, and you're not wrong that this game absolutely solidifies it. To go from four interceptions to in the second half, this dude was. He had 142.9 passer rating, 23 of 29 for 253 yards and four touchdowns. That's literally as good as you can play at the quarterback position. You cannot play better than what he did in the second half. But at the same time, the Chargers had one of the biggest collapses I've ever seen in the history of football. And it actually was. Okay. So a couple different things here. So in the history of football, no team has ever lost a playoff game with a turnover margin of 5-0, right? They had a 27-0 lead at one point. They, in the second half, they have Austin Eckler. We've talked about Austin Eckler. I don't know if anyone out there knows this, but Austin Eckler is a pretty good running back, right? I mean, you know, I like it when they give him the ball.
Two.
They were winning by 27 points and ran the ball with him five times. In the second
Something's
half.
Up with that. Something's
I don't know if
right.
Brandon Staley knows this, but when you run the ball, the clock keeps going. You know, like it's so inexcusable to be up by that match and throw the ball 28 times in the fucking second half. That is unbelievable. Okay. And just to kind of, it all comes down to me, to Brandon Staley. Like we can sit here and talk about Herbert not being the guy because of this loss, or you know, he should have been able to.
Coaching is bad over there.
Right, he should have been able to pull them out. No. It was so bad. Just think about the 2 weeks, right? So first, Brandon Staley was already on the hot seat in the middle of the year. It was very well documented that Brandon Staley's job was on the line. Then they won four or five games in a row. And everyone was like, oh, Chargers, you know, the Super Bowl, you know, Cinderella pick. Everyone was liking him. Then they clinched their playoff spot. And Brandon Staley inexplicably plays their starters. Mike Williams gets hurt. You can't tell me that having Mike Williams out there rather than Josh Palmer and DeAndre Carter wouldn't have made a difference in this game at some point.
Well, Mike Williams is basically his wide receiver one all year.
Right, exactly. And on top of all that, right, you have this culture that's the Chargers, you know, everyone, the chargering, all that stuff. As a head coach, he starts acknowledging these things. And he literally, after the game, said, I've been trying to talk this team out of chargering. He used his
that's
own
you.
Team.
That's Bro, you.
That's right. It's you are the reason for this. It was the most inexplicably coached football game I've ever seen in my entire life. There's never been anything like it. So, yes, Lawrence is a dog. Absolute dog. He's the man. And no one will ever do what he just did, have that turnaround. I don't think that'll ever be done again. But at the same time, and Herbert is not, you know, he's not to blame. But Brandon Staley takes a big piece of that cake, man. He has to.
Yeah, but Herbert could have, instead of being just a bystander, Herbert could have been the hero.
Yeah.
And he just didn't have it in him. Now, I'm not saying that he won't down the road. But like the Chargers, whether they're in San Diego or in LA, for our entire life, aside from 1 year, have always started off slow in the first three games, gone on a fucking tear for like the next eight games, and then they cool off again at the end. Like that is Charger. And it's not Brandon Staley's fault. It's been happening for 20 fucking years. I don't know why, but you pointed it right to it, Bobby. The fact that you're up 27-0 and you hand the ball off five more times to
five fucking times.
Some would say a top three running back in the league is ridiculous. You should lose your job because of that.
I agree. I mean, to me,
the O coordinator did, but
the one thing that would talk me out of my overreaction is exactly what you guys brought up, which is like, you got to see him with somebody fucking competent. You got to see this team with somebody competent at the control switch. And I think, I mean, to me, it's the worst ratio of talent on the field to bad coaching in the league. I think that Cliff Kingsbury's pretty close, but I think the Chargers have a better roster, you know? So yeah. I just think that it's being fucking wasted.
Exactly to this point. So there's one point in this game where it was like third and two, third and three. The Chargers called a jet sweep to their fourth string wide receiver, a dude that was on the practice squad earlier this year in one of the most pivotal plays of the fucking game. You hand it to a dude that wasn't even on your team last fucking week. And on top of that, right? On top of that, that's not even the inexcusable part. You know what the inexcusable part is? They've ran this play six times so far this year, and they've gained negative 21 yards.
Yeah, it's fucking, that's
ridiculous. And they called it in the biggest goddamn spot of the game. This was a great win by the Jags, right? Great. It absolute franchise changing. Doug Peterson is a dog. Trevor Lawrence is a dog. Travis Etienne is a dog. But also, it is the most inexcusable Charger loss in a history of inexcusable Charger losses. It's number one. It's worse.
I don't know. What about that Patriots comeback win?
No, it's worse.
Tomlinson was like crying. No, in the field. That was pretty.
I don't know. That was luck with Troy Brown. This was
you
fucked yourself here, right?
Yeah. And they didn't even turn the ball over. They didn't even turn the ball over. You know, there's always one play in one of these comebacks where you're like, oh my God, it's gonna. No, they just sucked.
Yeah, they just sucked. They just stopped being good at football. Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll see what the Chargers look like next year, but.
The ghost of Nate Cate and Cameron Dicker forgot how to kick the ball.
In the first.
Let's not talk about forgetting how to kick the ball, Bobby. Okay, we're gonna get to
we'll
that.
Get there. We'll get there.
Dude, in the first 30 minutes of this game, the Chargers controlled the ball 23 minutes of it. The time of possession at the end was 32 minutes.
No, but
minutes
they looked good, though, Mike. Like, they looked good. No,
but it was 32. By the end of the game, it was 32 minutes of the Chargers and 27 of the Jaguars, and the Jaguars were behind all game. So it should be passing, passing, passing. To Bonnie's point, that should have been, by the end of the game, like 42-18.
What is it with the running?
It's just strange. I don't have the stats in front of me, but I would put money down that Austin Ekeler carried the ball in the first half more than he did in the second half. Yeah. Right? So.
It's really weird. It's just a badly coached team. All right, well, let's move over to the NFC. And I got to start with this because I'm just so happy that it happened. And it proves everything we've been saying right for the entire year. It's the least surprising turn of events in postseason history. It's exactly what we said was going to happen. Exactly when it said it was going to happen. It's the method in which we said it was going to happen. And it's to the kind of team that we said was going to happen with. Ladies and gentlemen, your Minnesota Vikings. It's like, all right, what's the movie I've seen the most in my whole life? I've seen The Matrix probably more times than any other movie. And I know it line by line by line. And all I could think when I was watching that Giants-Vikings game was, I have seen this movie before. In fact, I described it on the podcast 50 times, as did you, gentlemen. Kirk Cousins, with more than one television broadcast feed going out into the ether, is the exact person we thought he was. Brian Daboll is the exact person we thought he was in the positive. The Vikings are exactly who we thought they were. You can get to Dalvin Cook and you can stop him. You can force Kirk Cousins to just throw it to what apparently he's only got one weapon. Like, he just forgot about Adam Thielen. He forgot about Dalvin Cook. He was just like, I'm just going to keep throwing to Justin Jefferson for 2.4 yards a game. And I'm going to lose because I'm Kirk Cousins. And that's what I do in the postseason. Gentlemen, What happened? Is it exactly what we said was going to happen?
It's fourth and eight with the game on the line, and you throw a 3 yard you throw a 3 yard completion.
You knew it though.
That was the most Kirk Cousins.
You knew what they were gonna. You knew the play they were gonna run. You were like, he's not gonna fucking throw it past the first down.
How do you not throw it past the sticks? How do you not throw it past the sticks?
You knew he was gonna not do that. I feel like the commentator said it. I feel like the commentator said
it.
It wasn't even like he threw it 6 yards. He threw it.
I could just imagine. It's like, you know, it's fourth and seven. He gets to Jefferson. It's like, you know what? Why don't you run a 2 yard out? Like, we'll really fake him out here. And he just like that completely summarizes, to your point, DK, everything that we've ever said about him and everything that we will continue to say about him is that when the game is on the line, he would rather give his receiver the chance to make the play as opposed to throw it past the fucking sticks.
Right.
Well, it was for the record, it wasn't even Jefferson. I think that's the most inexcusable part is like that's what kept this team afloat week after week was Justin Jefferson making absurd catches on third and fourth down. I think there was like four games.
But
he literally turned the tide of these.
Cowardly decision. You saw Cousins in real time make the decision to not be responsible for the team, the game, and the season. And
that's what it was.
He played good in this game. That's the funny
part. No, but you know what I'm talking about.
I know. Well, listen, he was 31 of 39 for two touchdowns.
Neither quarterback threw an incomplete pass.
Yeah, listen, he played awesome for most of that game. But then the moment came where he had to be someone and nut up or shut up. And he said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to check it down to my tight end for 2 yards on fourth and eight. And it's just it's the most Kirk Cousins thing ever.
What actually makes this more
he couldn't have done it better for us.
So much more ridiculous is that if you would just clip who he was in the first 2 years of his career against now, you'd say what the fuck happened to you? Because he won games in Washington by throwing 50-yard bombs to end the game and to put them into the playoffs. That's what we got. You like that? It's stupid little fucking walks the locker room
this year.
And now he's like, you know what, playoff, the entire season's on the line. Here you go, Hawkinson. Here's your 10th catch for 2 yards. It's just
stupid. I read blitz. Winners want the ball when the game's on the line. I read blitz. That's all I'm saying, dude. I mean, it's a lesson we all learned when we were 11 years old. Kirk Cousins didn't go to the movies that weekend, I guess. Giants, though.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, some credit where credit's due here. I mean, Brian Daboll's a great coach. He's getting a lot out of Sam Darnold, and quite frankly,
but that's hilarious. Oh. That is hilarious.
Apologies.
That is the best Freudian slip ever. Oh my god, that is funny.
Same guy.
I mean, under Daboll, maybe.
Okay, but
hilarious.
I kind of liked watching Daniel Jones play. I kind of liked watching him play this weekend. Honestly, I think there was something to him. He was happy feet. He was making little moves. He was doing what he needed to do. He was making the plays he needed to make. He was doing everything Kirk Cousins was doing, except not being a massive pussy about it.
He was the best quarterback until Monday, right? I mean, he absolutely
found a way to work that in.
Yeah, of course. but
why, what happened on Monday, Bobby?
we'll get there. 24-35, 300 yards, two touchdowns. Even bigger, 17 carries for 78 yards. That was
those are big carries too. Like it wasn't as though those runs were like just little, let me like roll out because I have to. Like they were big runs on big first down plays.
That was the difference in the game to me. I mean, you know, when you look at, you know, the, I don't want to say ineffectiveness of Zaquon, but like, you know, they weren't featuring Zaquon, right? That's how you know that they trust Daniel Jones and they trust his athletic ability and who he is. Because Daniel Jones was the featured running back of this game. He was the featured player. Like the entire Giants offensive game plan ran around Daniel Jones and what he did. And for that to be where the guy that was just a horrible quarterback under Joe Judge for the last 2 years is just, it's crazy to me, man. It's such a underrated story. To me, I think that Daniel Jones has transformed into this because that game right there, man, is going to make that dude a lot of money and give him respect, at least in New York, for at least 3 to 4 years. You know what I mean? Like that's a big time game that people are always going to go back to. That like when he has a bad game or like when people are questioning
this. Do you think what they do in the rest of the playoffs is going to have an impact on that though? Because when they get tonked in the next round, like I'm just not entirely sure. Like
I don't know if they're going to get tonked though.
You don't think the best team in the NFL is going to beat them? You don't think the best record in the NFL is going to beat them?
If this Giants
they're playing
team
the Eagles,
shows
by the way, for those of you at home listening, right. They're playing the Philadelphia Eagles.
Philadelphia Eagles
are going to win.
If this Giants team shows up that showed up this past week and Daniel Jones can be that effective against that defense, they definitely have a shot, man. I give a Brian Daboll coach team a shot to win any game that he ever coaches if they are within 10 points in the third or fourth quarter.
It's just so wild. After one fucking year, Brian Daboll goes 9-7-1, and now any game that he's in, you give him critics. Come on, dude. Stop. Like it's not
he's amazing.
No, he's not amazing. Stop.
This Giants team was putrid last year.
Right.
The same roster.
Who's the coach?
He just won with Isaiah Hodgkins as his number one wide receiver.
Sure did.
I mean, come on.
Against Kirk Cousins.
I agree with both you guys a little bit. Like, I really do think it sounds like I rate Dave a little higher than Mike does, probably not as high as Bobby does, but I think the Vikings were losing this weekend. Like, I think that was on the cards. Whoever wanted to do the beating, whoever wanted to deliver the punishment, that was just down to schedule. You know, that was down to who was penciled in to show up to Minnesota. And I think that it's very difficult for me to extrapolate it that any team, no matter how good the coach is, that beat the Vikings, and that means they're going to beat the Eagles. That doesn't compute. It doesn't make sense.
I didn't say they were going to beat them. I said they have a chance.
Every team's got a chance, except the Vikings, if Kirk Cousins is on TV. All right. Speaking of which, it's a perfect little segue because we're going to move right along here. I really did enjoy talking about that because it was a really fun game to watch, played out exactly like we thought, et cetera, et cetera. We'll go chronologically. Seahawks 49ers. Unfortunately, I want to sing the praises of the 49ers, but probably the least interesting game of the whole weekend to talk about. It was the most, not necessarily the most obvious result, but like 49ers are always winning that game. Thanks for playing Seattle. Like we talked about this last week. Thanks for coming. We appreciate it. Don't forget your gift bag on the way out. Geno Smith, great job this year, man. Pete Carroll, I think your coaching stock went up. I think we all got a little proof that a lot of what was going right in Seattle wasn't Russell Wilson and it was Pete Carroll for different times. Congratulations on your better season than anyone thought you were going to have. Congratulations on that great deal you got from Denver, and that's going to make your team good again a lot quicker than it's going to be in Denver. I'll tell you that much.
What happened to Russell Wilson? Was he not good?
He didn't have the best year, Bob. He did not have the best year. No.
A lot of bathrooms.
Yeah.
Much like myself, if he spent a little bit of time, a little bit less time shooting commercials than he did fucking watching football and playing football and watching game tape, he'd probably be a lot better at the job he actually wants to have. So here it is. 49ers are scary, man. They're scary. Bobby, are you going to be all right, dude?
I'm scared. I'm not going to lie. The only... So this game absolutely, this was the first taste of the, what's happening here all weekend, you know, because the Seahawks were up at half. So everyone was like, oh, maybe, no, 49ers are wagon. That was over so goddamn fast. The only thing that I took away from this game, from the 49ers, because, you know, obviously we already knew everything we knew. Christian McCaffrey, beast. Deebo Samuel, beast. Brandon Ayuk, beast.
All potential injury risks going through the
every single one of them. Literally every single one of them.
Literally all of them.
Brock Purdy was awesome in the second half. He left a little on the table in the
first
half.
He's got a lot of balls that kid.
Yeah, he does. Those rollouts where he's hitting dudes on the sideline were awesome, especially from a rookie. But what I took away from it was, and of course this has nothing to do with my rooting interest, but that the 49ers can be beat by a wide receiver one, and they can be beat bad from a wide receiver one, because DK Metcalf was all over that 49ers defense. I know it didn't end up in the outcome, but that's literally...
Yeah, but that's a
if
situation
if I'm looking
where you're going
for a kryptonite, that's it. That's the only one I can find is that.
I think that's a game plan thing, though, Mike. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it's like, all right, DK's going to get his. He's going to get his bag, but we're going to make these other guys try and beat us. Like, let's see.
Yeah. I just was waiting for it. I was waiting to see what kind of spin he was going to put on. Oh, I learned how the Cowboys can beat the 49ers. You want to know?
It's the only one. I look for a lot of routes, bro. Let me tell
you. They can be beat by a wide receiver one. You want to know why? It's because they have a wide receiver two. Like, Tyler Lockett's still a threat. Who's your wide receiver two? Are they still a threat, Bobby?
No. T.Y. Hilton, no, baby. No, T.Y.
The answer is no. It goes to T.Y. Hilton. So San Francisco is a fucking wagon.
Yeah, they're so
Brock good. has no fear. I do think it will be like, this is a great statement game, but it will be interesting to see what he does against a defense that is so fucking aggressive, like Dallas. But I wouldn't count on this kid shriveling up. I mean, their offense is a fucking wagon, and their defense is just as good. So, yeah, credit to the Seahawks. I thought, you know, I think Bobby and I had them at like 3 wins this year. I mean, and like in the prediction game at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, it didn't go well. And then,
yeah, no, we hit that one. But no, Seattle, I mean, San Francisco looks like a fucking problem.
So looks like a problem. Brock Purdy, right? It's still wild to me that Jimmy G went down and the 49ers have gotten better. That's not wild, but they've gotten better since he got hurt. And it's insane, man, that they were able to bring in Mr. Irrelevant. Listen to it. 12. So since his first start, he has 12 touchdown passes, first in the NFL, 1,200 yards passing, third, 9.4 yards per attempt, second, 119.4 passer rating, first, rookie of the month for December and January, and 2-time rookie of the week. So this dude has come in and just been a top 10 quarterback in the NFL so far this year. I'm not saying he actually is. Statistically, since he started playing, he absolutely is a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. So it's just crazy. I don't know if the Cinderella slipper is going to fall off. If there ever is a way that the 49ers don't win the Super Bowl out of this, is more than likely because of Brock Purdy turning into a rookie all of a sudden in one of these games.
Yeah, but he already didn't do that.
Right. So we'll see. I don't know.
All right. Well, I mean, we'll see. I think that what I like about the NFC as of right now is that there's potential for anything to happen. It's difficult to predict. We don't know what Philadelphia Eagles team is going to show up. We don't know what Dallas Cowboys team is going to show up. We don't know what, well, we actually do know what 49ers team is going to show up. So that sucks for you, Bob. But let's move on, because essentially, well, we can roll this into this conversation. What we thought was going to happen with Tom Brady and the Cowboys and all the kind of history repeating itself thing didn't happen. It was hilarious to talk about. I really did enjoy it. Like, let's be realistic. That Tampa Bay team was fucking terrible, and they looked terrible in that game. I'm sure you weren't comfortable, Bob, because of everything that's happened. But like, let's be honest. Like, the magic just wasn't there for Brady this year. And I don't want to spend any fucking time talking about him, because I've spent enough of my life talking about Tom Brady. But the Cowboys looked the opposite of what they usually look like in those situations. If every single time we bang the drum of what the Vikings are going to look like in the wild card round or the divisional round or whatever, and it comes true, it's almost as much of a truism that the Cowboys are going to do that, especially with how they finished the year, which was limping at best. And they looked calm, self-assured, collected, unintimidated by the moment. Ezekiel Elliott still probably shouldn't even really
sucks.
Spell, to be honest.
Horrible.
I don't know what that guy's doing. But Tony Pollard, Dak Prescott, after I just fresh off talking shit about him last week and the week before and the week before that, looking good. Looking, like you said, best QB of the weekend. So let me ask you this, Bob. It's a broad question, but I know that you'll give me the answer I want. Are you excited that at least this is the version of the Dallas Cowboys going up against the 49ers? If you saw them limp past the Buccaneers, you know, win by a little, win barely, win on a mistake by the other team, something like that, you'd be terrified. You're at least buoyed and encouraged by the fact that they're coming in to play the San Francisco 49ers, looking like a team that confidence. There's confidence there. What do you think?
Yeah, no, 100%. You know, it's so funny with the Cowboys, because they ended last year on such a high note. They beat the Eagles, actually, like 54-10 in the last week and then lost to the 49ers. This week, like you said, limping in, and this is the team we see. It was awesome to see this, man. If this is the version of the Cowboys, I mean, listen, earlier this season, you know, you guys were even on board. You know, the two that ragged me about, you know, my fandom and like the Cowboys choking more than anyone. If this is the squad that shows up, just as we were earlier in the year, I think that we actually have a legit shot to beat the 49ers and go forward. If this is the squad that shows up, that's a very big if for next
I told you to give me the answer I wanted.
This game, though, this game, I told you guys all this. This is the game the Cowboys show up for, the one that we just had. Because everyone's doubting them. Everyone's talking shit. Everyone's, you know, down on them, picking the Bucks. Even though I'll still never forgive the entire NFL media for forgetting what a horseshit team that Bucks team was for 18 goddamn weeks and picking them over the Cowboys all
week. We did it too.
It's such bullshit, bro. Like,
because it was
That team was so unwatchable.
I know,
as soon
but
as it's
fun.
The playoffs,
it
they're like, oh,
like
but
Bobby.
What about the Bucks? The Bucks
it was
fucking
so
sucked.
Fun to be like they, Bobby, the worst Tampa Bay Buccaneers
two,
ever
two,
has like a good chance of beating you.
They
2 weeks ago, I had you I'm not convinced, but it was in your mind that the 8-9 Bucks could win the Super Bowl.
Just because of Tom Brady, it doesn't change the fact that that team was an absolute horseshit in a dumpster fire of a football team. All right.
But Brady was doing that thing at the end of the year, you know, like that Tom Brady thing. And if he was going to do that to anybody in the division, in the wild card round, it was going to be the Cowboys. Like, it just was like, come on, you get it.
It's true. It's true.
he threw 66 fucking passes.
He missed a lot of guys. He missed a lot of guys.
It was a bad performance.
I know that we don't want to talk about Brady anymore, but I will just for 2 minutes, DK. I just want to say, at 45
weird
years
old.
The
guy with the Patriots jersey is talking about Tom Brady.
At 45 years old.
Oh, hey, Jeff.
He cannot be the best player on your team anymore. And everyone's been giving him shit. Everywhere. Well, maybe if you'd shown up for camp and actually play and been there, like he'd be better. He was the workhorse of this team. They actually rested Leonard Fournette and Julio Jones the last 4 weeks of the year to get to the playoffs. And Fournette rushed 5 times for 11 yards.
All right. I mean, it's an awful lot harder to play running back in the NFL than it is to be Tom Brady.
Well, I didn't know Tom Brady resting caused them to have the 32nd. Rush offense in the entire league and have the worst offensive line maybe I've ever seen and have just inexcusably bad at tackling defense.
Can I say something to you though, Bob? What I did like, Tampa Bay, Tom Brady, sure, whatever. What I did like about the Cowboys is that they had some like Cowboy shit happen to them and they still won the game. Like missing a record amount of extra points in a game is like exactly how the Dallas Cowboys would lose a game normally. Like it's exactly how they would lose a game normally in the playoffs in this situation. And they were just so good and so good at scoring touchdowns that it just didn't matter. Like that to me should encourage you that like some of that like really bad double doink level fucking luck in the postseason that haunts your team, you might be going the way of the dodo. Like you might just be so good that it doesn't matter, right? Yeah. And maybe you'll go beat the 49ers for that reason.
I can tell you, if this is the Dak Prescott, I said this to you, if this is the Dak Prescott that the Cowboys get for the rest of the playoffs, no, listen.
I know, I'm doing this on purpose, Mike.
you can't deny the fact that Dak Prescott was unbelievable on Monday night. No player in NFL history has had 4 touchdown passes and that rushing touchdown like he did in that game. No one has ever done it. Also, on top of that, he was in control of that game from beginning to end. Every single moment, he lived up to it. Every single time there was a huge third down. We already talked about this on this podcast. Every time there was a big third down, Dak Prescott converted it. All right. He was just on fire in that game. So if that's Bobby, the quarterback, listen, if that's the quarterback that the Cowboys get for the rest of the playoffs, I think that could bring them to I really do, man.
I know.
Who's left at the quarterback position in the NFC right now, right? Jalen Hurts never won a playoff game. Daniel Jones, still Daniel Jones. He's amazing. He was awesome. You know, we just talked. Sam Darnold, right. You just confused him for Sam Darnold, case in point.
It was a name confusion, they are quite similar.
Brock Purdy, who, yes, has been amazing, but he's still a rookie. So at the same time, like, yes, I know the Cowboys are the Cowboys. They always will be the Cowboys. You guys know, if anyone knows that, I do. All right. But he is the best quarterback left in the NFC and the most trusted. I'm feeling okay right now. I'm feeling all right. I'm just letting you know.
I know you're doing your thing that you always do. You set yourself up for this massive fucking cliff to fall off of. And this is, you're doing this to you. I'm trying to reel you in. Do you think that Dak Prescott has less to lose than Brock Purdy? Because Brock Purdy doesn't know anything. He's a rookie and all he does is win, like you just said. He is a top five or top 10 NFL quarterback in the last, since he started. Those are what you just said.
Yeah, it's true.
And that team, listen, yeah, Dak had a great game, but to your point, it was also against a historically bad defense.
That's true.
So, listen, I think that he played great. And if I would have just showed you the stat line, like, hey, Bobby, the Dallas Cowboys played against Tom Brady. Here's a stat for you. The kicker was 0-for-0 for field goals, but actually went 1-for-5 at extra points. 9 times out of 10, you would have been like, oh, so we lost. But they didn't. They overcame that. They won. They're fast on defense. They're aggressive on defense. Dak is playing really well. But just don't start talking to me about how no quarterback in history has ever done what Dak Prescott just did. Please.
That's a fact.
No, stats don't matter. Stats can't matter for your argument and not matter for mine.
The same could.
He's got a point. But anyway, you can't take away from. Why don't we just let Bobby have this week, all right? Because I think we all know that when we do this show, circa 7 days from now, the tone might be a little different. So love you,
Bobby.
I think the Cowboys are gonna beat the 49ers the other way.
That's
a hot take.
I just really want to see an NFC Championship game, and I just want that to happen. So you know.
We've
please.
Been progressing through our entire
Cowboys. Please win this fucking game.
TK, like, we've been progressing throughout our entire friendship with Bobby to the point where now we get to see him see his team lose in the Super Bowl. Like, that's where we are this year.
Get to? That would be heartbreaking. I would hate to watch that. You're a sick fuck.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Jesus.
I'll be happy to be heartbroken if I can just get to a fucking Super Bowl.
No, dude, you won't, bro. Bobby, they won't trust me. Trust me, Mike and I have both seen our teams lose in Super Bowls. It's you don't know.
I've never seen the Cowboys play in a game that has the word championship in it. Never.
I know. I understand, dude. And I need you to take my word for the fact that seeing, like, Mike has a lot more Super Bowl experience as a fan than I do. And he's seen him win. So maybe it takes the hurt off. But honestly, I doubt it.
It doesn't.
Seeing him lose in the Super Bowl, Bob, nothing hurts like that. Nothing. I guarantee you. You'd rather they don't get there.
Because then you start making your like your equivalent arguments to people. Like, well, at least they got there. And once you say that, you're like, oh, well, that sounds like an asshole thing to say. Like, you need to be there and win. Cowboys are going to beat the 49ers, and then they're going to lose to the Eagles.
All right, that is a hot take. Let's talk a little bit because we are running out of time. I think we've covered a lot of these teams now at this point. I want to talk just a little bit about Bengals Bills. Unless anyone has the thought that the Jags are going to beat the Chiefs. I mean, we just big up the Jags a little bit. But I do want to make sure we get Bengals-Bills in. That's the heavyweight matchup of this next round. That's the Tyson-Foreman or the Tyson-Holyfield matchup, the Ali-Foreman matchup.
It's Tyson-Holyfield because it's like it didn't finish the first time. Yeah.
Right, right. And there's baggage. There's a baggage from this season. There's conference baggage. There's the idea that if Joe Burrow gets past Josh Allen and the Bills, we start talking about Joe Burrow in a different light again. I mean, I think we're all pretty high on him, but like, we started this season with everybody in the National Football League media going, Burrow versus Mahomes, Burrow versus Mahomes. And I was trying to tell you guys Allen versus Mahomes. And I was trying to tell you guys that Allen shouldn't be in that conversation yet. Burrow, we discovered over the course of the year, should be. Because he's got fucking Mahomes' number, right? So that should be the comparison. That is the Brady Manning comparison at this point. Like, at this point, right?
Yeah.
So Burrow wins this game, and I got to tell you, I got a good fucking feeling he's gonna. what does that mean for who we're talking about as the top quarterbacks in this league? Like, this is such a big game so early, like in the divisional round, this is such a big game. So, I mean, am I crazy for thinking that the Bengals could be going in as the favorites this week?
I don't think so. I mean, you look at our track record on this podcast is we really like this Bengals team, and they've been on that power rankings literally since I think they started out 0-2. And I still had them on there. Like, Joe Burrow to me is that dude. When you think of a prototype quarterback, mentally, arm strength, everything about him, that's who he is, right?
Yeah.
And I think what just speaks to the Allen versus Burrow debate perfectly is Josh Allen's claim to fame is playing amazing, having the best game of his life, and almost beating Patrick Mahomes.
Right.
That is his claim to fame. Joe Burrow's claim to fame is that he's 3-0 against Patrick Mahomes.
He is Patrick Mahomes' daddy.
Right. There's nothing else that needs. So I think Allen has way more to gain off of this game than Burrow does, because if Burrow wins this game, to me, I just think it's stamped. It's a 100% Joe Burrow is better than Josh Allen. And there's no doubt about it.
Let me ask you a question. If someone from the future came back in time and jumped on our podcast right now, there's no amount of success he could tell me Joe Burrow had when his career ended that I would be surprised by. If he tells me that he ends with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I'm not batting an eye at that. If he tells me that Josh Allen is 1, 3, 4, I'm going, damn, really? What happened? What changed? You know? So, and that I think speaks to the sort of mentality, what they're bringing to the table. Like, I think bottle talent, Josh Allen, you know, he's got that big ass that he waddles around. He can fucking run. He can jump. He can do all those things. He's a freak fucking athlete. He can throw in awkward positions better than almost anyone I've ever seen. I always used to say Donovan McNabb was the best at throwing across his body and like doing the shit that you're not supposed to do as a quarterback and still completing passes. Josh Allen can do that shit. I think sometimes the scheming lets him down, and I'm not taking anything away from the guy. I'm really not trying to. But Mike, Joe Burrow's just so much easier to believe in, right? It's just so much easier to believe in him.
Yeah, I think it's what Bobby said, right? Is that he's 3-0 against Patrick Mahomes, and in two of those three games, he was down by 14 points in the second half, and he still won. Like he just wills his team to victory. I think if this goes the way that I think we all think it's going to go, with the Bengals winning, because I have the Bengals winning. Like, we now know that it's Mahomes and Burrow are the new Brady Manning. And Allen is like Philip Rivers or Steve McNair.
Philip Rivers? He doesn't even get Dwayne Wade, Drew Brees slot as number three. He doesn't even get that number three slot. Damn, son. No.
Well, I don't know if Josh Allen's ever going to win one. I just don't know.
I don't know.
Right, that's the Philip Rivers.
Turnovers,
right.
Man. That's it's.
He turns around and wins the Super Bowls here, like
It would be the most on brand missing the point.
Missing the point,
ever.
Guys. Yeah, that's why we called it that.
But I'm just saying that turnovers are literally the biggest red flag to me for a Super Bowl quarterback. Right. That's what everyone always talks about, and Josh Allen is the most spectacular turnover prone quarterback I've ever seen in my life. And I mean that as a complete oxymoron. He is spectacular, but he's so turnover prone. It's absurd.
He's somewhat controlled chaos.
Yeah. Agreed.
I think as much as that is, I mean, I was just enjoying listening to you guys yell at each other in agreement, but I think as much
we do that really
as
well.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, interesting. As much as all that's going to be fun, I think we should just to leave it on this note. Can anyone make a case to me that the Jaguars have enough pixie dust from that last game to beat who are probably my favorites to win the whole thing still, the Kansas City Chiefs? Can anyone mount an argument for that?
No.
Ah, that was good radio, Bob.
I want to, but he's not. If he throws four picks in the first quarter this week, he's not going up against a terrible head coach and Justin Herbert. He's going up against Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
Like that's They'll just milk it.
It's a whole different kettle of fish. It's a whole different kettle of fish. I'd like to say goodbye then to the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think I had a good time talking about them this year. I think we're going to talk about them a lot more next year on the Power Ranking Show. I really do. And I think
maybe
they,
even the preseason Power Ranking
Maybe even
show.
The preseason Power Rankings and the prediction show. I think they're going to be a lot of fun to watch. We could all be de facto third team Jaguars fans, so that there's at least like 26, 27 of those, as opposed to, you know, like other fan bases that have thousands and millions. But I mean, if we're the 27th, 28th, 29th, and 30th Jacksonville Jaguar fans, like they might give us a lapel or a nice blazer or something. Sorry to shit on the giant market that is Jacksonville. But I love it. I love that team. I love what they I love what they're doing. And I'm excited to see them next year after they definitely lose this next round. So that'll do it, I think, for Missing the Point and our fun football look back, look forward. We're going to have less teams to talk about next week. And we're going to have less teams to talk about the week after that. And I'm real, real Please. Excited to do a Super Bowl preview with you guys. And I'm thinking Bobby might have hung up that Cowboys Please. Jacket by that point, but maybe not.
Please.
Bobby says please to the gods. He says please to the gods. Goodbye.
Have you ever wondered what actually happens in Congress every day? Stay informed on Capitol Hill's daily happenings with a concise, factual summary of the Senate and House of Representatives' activities from the previous session, free from bias, on the Congressional Record Daily Digest podcast. Subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and discover the process from the heart of U.S. politics. The Congressional Record Daily Digest, an Electricast production.
Welcome to the Candle Power Hour. Come with us backstage behind the scenes of show business spanning over four decades and bringing you the experiences that can only be told by the people who were there.
Our guests are from the A-list, the F-list, and everyone in between. Get set for some of the most insane, hilarious, and inspiring stories you will ever hear.
I'm Mercury.
And I'm Diego.
Your host for the Candle Power Hour.